Okay, good morning everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Mark Greaves and I'm an account manager here at Canada Life and your host this morning's webinar. I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague Paul Thompson, who many of you know is one of our award-winning tax and estate planning consultants. This morning's webinar is going to look at inheritance tax planning, specifically the facility to recycle your mill rate band every 7 years, and obviously some of the estate planning options that this can provide for you. So before we get started, just a quick couple of housekeeping items to cover off. So for those of you listening live this morning, we'll get CPD certificates emailed across to you within the next 24 to 48 hours. Unfortunately, CPD is not available to those listening to recordings or via podcast facility. Talking of recordings, we will upload the recording of today's webinar to our archive section on the website. And again, that's normally within the next 24 to 48 hours. You will see that you have a chat box facility on your screen. Please do use this to raise any questions as we go along, and we'll try and pick up as many of those as possible at the end of the webinar if we have time. There's also a section for you to download copies of the slides plus any relevant handouts and sales aids. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Paul, who'll talk you through this morning's agenda and learning objectives. Paul.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning. Paul Thompson, Tax and Estate Planning Consultant at Canada Life. My task this morning is to demonstrate how the 325,000 nil rate band can be recycled every 7 years during lifetime. And to illustrate how that can happen, I'm going to use a discretionary gift trust together with a gift and loan trust. And then as an alternative to the discretionary gift trust, I'm going to demonstrate the benefits of a flexible reversionary trust. So let's start first of all then with the discretionary gift trust. This is designed for the client who's perfectly happy to make an irrevocable gift into a discretionary trust with no strings attached. In other words, he knows that he can never get any benefit out of the trust back into his own hands. I want to start with a case study where a client puts £206,000 into an investment bond and makes it subject to a discretionary gift trust. Now I'm going to assume that the client hasn't yet used his annual exemption of £3,000 for this tax year, neither has he used his annual exemption for last tax year. So of that £206,000 gift, £6,000 will be immediately exempt from inheritance tax, leaving £200,000 to be a chargeable lifetime transfer. For the time being, I'm going to assume that the client hasn't made any previous chargeable transfers. We'll look at that in a bit more detail in a minute. Now, clearly, that £200,000 will fit comfortably within the 325,000 nil rate band. So although it's a chargeable transfer, it will be chargeable at 0%, meaning that it won't trigger an immediate inheritance tax liability. The 200,000 will be placed on the client's personal cumulative total of chargeable lifetime transfers, but it only remains on that personal cumulative total for 7 years. After 7 years, it drops out of account and effectively the client will start again with a clean sheet. Now, the fact that there's no inheritance tax payable at the outset is an important feature. Every client who's making a chargeable lifetime transfer will not want to trigger an immediate inheritance tax liability of 20%. Every client who's making a chargeable lifetime transfer will therefore ensure that the amount is within their available nil rate band. It's an important point for two reasons. First of all, it means that there's no inheritance tax payable when the trust is created, but it also means that there cannot be any inheritance tax exit charges on any benefits paid out from the trust within the first 10 years. No inheritance tax at outset, forget about inheritance tax exit charges for the first 10 years of the trust. Now let's go 10 years down the lifetime of this trust. Let's assume that nothing has yet been paid out to the beneficiaries. value of the trust fund, value of the investment bond, is now worth £400,000. Because we've hit the 10th anniversary, we now need to determine, is there going to be a periodic charge to inheritance tax? The answer to that question is that there will not be a periodic charge if, and these days I fully accept this is a very big if the nil rate band has actually gone up, and it's gone up to a figure of at least £400,000. If that happens, there will be no periodic charge, and that has a knock-on impact to subsequent exit charges. Because if there's no periodic charge, that means there can't be any inheritance tax exit charges on any benefits paid out to the beneficiary for the next 10 years. But let's get down to reality. Let's assume that we get to the 10th anniversary and we find that the value of the trust fund on that day, plus the value of any capital payments that have been made to the beneficiaries in the previous 10 years, if the total exceeds the nil rate band on that day, there will be a periodic charge. And if there's a periodic charge, then you guarantee that there will be inheritance tax exit charges on any benefits paid out to the beneficiaries in the following 10 years. So if that happens, how do you calculate the amount of the periodic charge? How do you calculate the amount of the exit charge? Let's go back to our example where we've hit the 10th anniversary. Value of the trust fund, value of the investment bond is 400,000. Let's say the nil rate band has actually gone up by now, but it's only increased to a figure of 375,000. So that means there will be a periodic charge. How much? Well, at current rates, I've no idea what the rates of inheritance tax are going to be in 2 years' time, let alone 10 years' time. But at current rates, the periodic charge will simply be 6% of the difference between the value of the trust fund and the value of the nil rate band. So in my example, £1,500. The responsibility for paying that rests on the shoulders of the trustees. They don't have to pay it out of their own pocket. They can use the amount of the trust fund to generate the periodic charge. So presumably in this example, they'll take a partial withdrawal from the investment bond, well within the 5% tax deferred facility, and use that cash to pay HMRC. Now, I haven't shown this slide to my compliance department. I hope we can keep this between ourselves. I'm sure they'd be interested in a growth of 25% over 2 years. But I'm not making any promises here. I'm just trying to illustrate a point. Let's say 2 years later, the investment bond has grown to £500,000 and the trustees decide that now is the time to pay the money out to the beneficiaries. If they do that, they will trigger an inheritance tax exit charge. Now, the only reason that there's an exit charge is because at the previous 10-yearly anniversary, there was a periodic charge. Had that periodic charge been nil, well, the exit charge on the subsequent distribution, that would have been nil as well. Unfortunately, the periodic charge wasn't nil. So how do you calculate the amount of the exit charge? It's a two-stage process. The first step is to calculate what's known as the effective rate. And that's fairly simple. That's the previous periodic charge divided by the value of the trust fund at the previous periodic charge date. So in this example, 0.375%. The second step is to multiply the amount that's being paid to the beneficiaries by the effective rate. But the exit charge is a proportionate charge. So you then need to determine how far into the next 10-yearly period you've travelled by the time this money is paid out to the beneficiaries. Now, in my example, we've gone 2 years into the next 10-yearly period. So you multiply the result of that calculation by 2/10. Or in fact, the legislation expects you to work in terms of quarters. So the actual numbers are 8, because there are 8 quarters in 2 years, divided by 40. What on earth does all that mean? It means that by paying out £500,000 to the beneficiaries, the trustees will trigger an inheritance tax exit charge of £375. Many clients won't suffer periodic and exit charges, and those that do will find that the amounts involved are tiny, tiny proportions in relation to the value of the trust fund. Now, you might remember that when I set the example up, I said that I was assuming that the client hadn't made any previous chargeable lifetime transfers. If that were not the case, if he had made previous chargeable transfers, they would have to be deducted from the nil rate band in the periodic charge calculation. That would have the effect of increasing the periodic charge. That would have the effect of increasing the exit charge. Two things I need to emphasize here. First of all, I'm talking about the chargeable transfers made by the client in the 7 years before the start date of this discretionary gift trust. Not the 7 years before the 10th anniversary, not the 7 years before death, the 7 years before the commencement date of this discretionary trust. Secondly, if he had made chargeable transfers in that 7 year period 10 years ago, and if the trust lasts for long enough, those chargeable transfers will continue to have an impact, not just on the 10th anniversary, but also the 20th and the 30th and the 40th, throughout the lifetime of the trust. We tend to think chargeable transfers, they only have an impact for 7 years, or in some circumstances, they can have an impact for 14 years. In these circumstances, they can continue to have an impact for up to 125 years. Now, some people like to see arithmetic like this in black and white. Other people prefer to see diagrams. Here's the nil rate band that we know is going to be level until April 2021, after which time it's going to increase each year in line with CPI. At least that's what we're being told at the moment. You know how these things can change. Here's a client who, like every other client, has invested an amount within the nil rate band into a bond and made it subject to a discretionary gift trust, and all the benefits have been paid out within the first 10 years. He hasn't made any previous chargeable transfers, so that means there would be no inheritance tax payable when the trust was created, and that in turn means that there cannot be an inheritance tax exit charge in the first 10 years. Note that even if the amount paid out exceeds the nil rate band, because there was no tax payable at the outset, there cannot be any inheritance tax exit charges in the first 10 years of the trust. So what happens if the trust lasts for longer than 10 years? What about if the benefits are paid out after, let's say, 15 years? Well, here we have to consider the position at the previous 10-yearly anniversary. Now, in this example, the value at the previous 10-yearly anniversary was under the nil rate band. So that would have meant no periodic charge, and that in turn means that there cannot be any inheritance tax exit charges on any benefits paid out in the following 10 years. As before, even if the amount paid out exceeds the nil rate band, because there was no periodic charge, it means there cannot be any inheritance tax exit charges in the following 10 years. So let's move on then to think about the gift and loan trust. This is an opportunity to create a discretionary trust without a chargeable transfer at the outset. The only element of gift is the nominal amount, normally of £10, that goes into the discretionary trust just to start it off, and undoubtedly that will be exempt. The loan that's subsequently made to the trustees, that's not a transfer of value, that doesn't create a chargeable transfer, so it doesn't matter whether the loan is 50,000, half a million, 5 million, there will not be any inheritance tax payable at the outset. Unfortunately, just because you've sidestepped making a chargeable transfer at the outset doesn't mean you also sidestep potential periodic and exit charges. But the good news is that there will never be any inheritance tax exit charges on any loan repayments that the trustees make back to the settlor, and the periodic charge, that will be based on the value of the bond at each 10 yearly anniversary minus whatever the outstanding balance of loan is at each 10 yearly anniversary. In effect, what that means is that the periodic charge will be based on the future growth on the money that the trustees have borrowed. Not the money that the trustees have borrowed plus the growth, just the growth on the money that the trustees have borrowed. And that seems to me to have implications for the 100,000 gift and loan trust. I would be prepared to give my personal guarantee that the future growth on 100,000, just the growth, not the 100,000 itself, the future growth on 100,000 will never get anywhere near the nil rate band in the future. So that means for a discretionary gift and loan trust of £100,000, there will never be periodic charges, there will never be exit charges. But with any discretionary trust, you have to take into account previous chargeable transfers made in the 7 years before the trust was created. And in order to illustrate how that works in the real world, we'll use a gift and loan trust as an example. Let's not have a 100,000 gift and loan trust. Let's have £1 million gift and loan trust. Now, it seems to me that even with pretty modest growth assumptions, the growth on £1 million could be pretty substantial, but you'll see that in this example, the growth on the million is under the nil rate band at the 10th anniversary. So it looks as though there's going to be no periodic charge. But what about if the client at some time in the 7 years before taking out this loan trust put 150,000 into a discretionary gift trust? In other words, he made 150,000 chargeable lifetime transfer in the 7 years before the gift and loan trust was taken out. That's very tempting to think, well, so what? Who cares? It was 150,000, so it would have been within the nil rate band. The client is still alive 10 years after the loan trust was taken out. So by now, that 150,000 will have dropped off the client's personal cumulative total of chargeable transfers. What's the problem? The problem is that because that 150,000 chargeable lifetime transfer was made in the 7 years before the gift and loan trust was taken out, the nil rate band available to the gift and loan trust has to be reduced by 150,000. So that means there is actually a periodic charge, and that will result in exit charges being levied on any benefits paid out to the beneficiaries in the following 10 years. How could that be avoided? Well, one way is always, always, always take out a loan trust before a gift trust is taken out with a chargeable lifetime transfer. If the loan trust is taken out first, it will have a full nil rate band. If the discretionary gift trust is taken out after the loan trust, it will also have a full nil rate band. Now, it's all very well for me to pontificate you must do the loan trust first. What about if you get a client in next week and he says, I like the idea of this loan trust thingy. You do your fact find and you discover that he put $150,000 into a discretionary gift trust 6 months ago. So you can't do the loan trust first. Is there another way around the problem? Well, yes, there is. All you have to do is to wait for 6.5 years until that $150,000 chargeable transfer has dropped off the client's cumulative total. But that doesn't really do this year's new business figures much good, does it? So is there another way around the problem? Well, what about if you said to the client, put $500,000 into a gift and loan trust today, and then put the other $500,000 into another gift and loan trust next week? Now, clearly the growth on $500,000 will be exactly half of the growth on $1,000,000. So when the first of those two loan trusts gets to its 10th anniversary, the growth will be under the albeit reduced nil rate band, meaning no periodic charge, no exit charge for the next 10 years. So it works a treat for the first loan trust. But what about the second one when it gets to its 10th anniversary 1 week later? Well, the situation on that will be exactly the same. So by taking out more than one loan trust on different days, you can multiply the benefit of any available nil rate band, and you can reduce, or in most cases, eliminate altogether any future periodic and exit charges. Now, what about if you combine the gift and loan trust with a chargeable lifetime transfer into a discretionary gift trust? Let's say we've got a client who has £1,000,000 that he wants to invest as IHT efficiently as possible. He wants to avoid triggering an immediate 20% inheritance tax liability, which means that he can't have a chargeable lifetime transfer of more than £325,000. So let's say he decides to put that £325,000 into a discretionary gift trust. The remaining £675,000 he lends to the trustees of a gift and loan trust. Now, remember I said earlier that it's important to take out the loan trust before the chargeable lifetime transfer trust. So in practice, he would actually do it the other way around. Now, by doing that, that means that the future growth on both trusts will immediately accrue outside of the client's estate from day one, free of inheritance tax. The capital in the chargeable lifetime transfer trust, that will also be outside of the client's estate for the purposes of inheritance tax after 7 years. Now, 7 years later, the client can then take a loan repayment from the gift and loan trust and put it into a new discretionary gift trust. Let's say by now the nil rate band has gone up to £375,000. So that means that he can take the loan repayment, invest it in a new discretionary gift trust, and recycle his nil rate band. Now, doesn't that mean that taking a loan repayment of £375,000 will trigger a large chargeable gain, which will be subject to income tax? Well, yes, it would if the policies in the gift and loan trust were encashed. But by assigning segments within the gift and loan trust into a new discretionary gift trust, that will not trigger a chargeable event. That will not happen until subsequently the policies are surrendered, and that could be 10, 20, 30 years in the future. So by taking out a combination of a gift and loan trust and a discretionary trust, you can recycle your nil rate band every 7 years. Let's say we've got a client who is 65 and he has a life expectancy of 17 years. Now in practice, this chap, he does very well. He lives on to age 86. In which case, if he does some forward planning, he could utilize 3 nil rate bands during his lifetime and have another nil rate band available on his death, getting £1.3 million outside of his estate free of inheritance tax. Now, you may well have some clients that say, yeah, it's all very well and good, but I can't afford to give away £1.3 million with no strings attached. What am I going to do if I need some of that cash back? Well, here is where the flexible reversionary trust could be a viable alternative. The flexible reversionary trust is designed for the client who wants to make a gift out of the estate into a discretionary trust, but they're a bit nervous about doing so. Why would the client want to make a large irrevocable gift into a discretionary trust when none of us can see into the future? For all he knows, there could be an unforeseeable emergency in a couple of years' time, and the client wished he could get some money out of that trust back into his own hands. That's exactly what the flexible reversionary trust is designed to achieve. And we at Canada Life believe that the flexible reversionary trust gives the best of both worlds when you compare it to the gift and loan trust and the discounted gift trust. Why? Well, the gift and loan trust is brilliant in terms of flexibility of access to capital that it gives to the client. The client can have regular loan repayments, no loan repayments, ad hoc loan repayments, but the shortcoming is that with the gift and loan trust, you only get the future growth out of the estate free of inheritance tax. The capital, the outstanding balance of loan, that remains in the client's estate, whether the client survives for 7 years or 17 years. That shortcoming is addressed by the discounted gift trust. That gets the growth out of the estate immediately, but in addition, after 7 years, all of the capital is out of the estate as well. But the discounted gift trust isn't very flexible. Once you've decided the level of regular capital payments that are going to be made to the client for the rest of the client's lifetime, that's fixed. It can't go up, it can't go down, it can't be switched off. That's not a problem with the flexible reversionary trust, which allows the client at each anniversary to dip into the trust fund, but only if the client needs to. Any benefits that the client doesn't wish to take, well, they can remain within the protective walls of the trust. And unlike the gift and loan trust, unlike the discounted gift trust, the benefits of a flexible reversionary trust can be paid to the beneficiaries whenever the trustees think it's appropriate, from day one, 365 days a year. How on earth can that be achieved? Let's take a look at an example based on a client investing £100,000 into one of these arrangements. No discount with the flexible reversionary trust, which means that subject to any available exemptions that the client may have, all of that will be a chargeable lifetime transfer. But if he hasn't made any previous chargeable lifetime transfers, who cares? It's well within the nil rate band. It's not going to trigger an immediate inheritance tax liability, and 7 years later, it will drop out of account. It also means that because there's no discount, there's no need to submit the client to any form of medical underwriting procedure. So that cuts down the administration at the outset. Now, I think I'm legally obliged to say that there are other forms of flexible reversionary trust available. Obviously, none of them is as good as the Canada Life version, what we call the wealth preservation account. But typically, with the wealth preservation account, we will take that 100,000 investment and we'll split it into 10 investment bonds, each of £10,000. And to increase the flexibility a bit more, we'll take each of those bonds and split them into 5 separate policies, each of £2,000. Typically, the first 5 policies will mature after a year. The second 5 will mature after 2, the third after 3, and so on until the 10th lot mature after 10 years. All of these policies are made subject to a discretionary trust for the client's chosen beneficiaries, but the trust wording says if any of these policies hits its maturity date, and if the client, if the settlor, is still living on that date, well, the maturity proceeds must be paid to the client. But I said the client gets flexible access. If the client decides that he doesn't need some or all of the maturity proceeds, well, the trustees have the ability to defer the maturity date. So let's say we get to the end of year one and the settlor says to the trustees, actually, this year I don't need any benefit. So the trustees exercise their power to defer the maturity date of those first 5 policies by 10 years, and they put them onto the end of the conveyor belt. A lot of people like to refer to this as the conveyor belt trust. Now, we've been running arrangements like this for over 25 years. And in our experience, well over 80% of people that take out this arrangement do this every year. Every year they say to the trustees, no, I don't need any benefit, and the trustees defer the maturities. The client has got the growth out of the estate immediately. After 7 years, all of the capital is out of the estate as well. And yet, at each anniversary, the client has the opportunity, if needed, to get some benefit out of the trust back into their own hands. It's a safety net. And just like any safety net, they hope it will never be used. But it's a real comfort to know that it's there just in case. Now, if I showed you what 80% of clients did for the rest of the lifetime of this 125-year trust, it would start to get a bit monotonous, wouldn't it? So let's say we get to the end of year 11 and the client says to the trustees, actually, this year I would like some benefit. Perhaps he's reached retirement and he needs to top up his pension income. Perhaps he's got long-term care issues and he's got some costs associated with that. So the trustees decide that they're going to allow 2 policies to mature. Maturity benefits are paid to the client. Hopefully that triggers a chargeable gain. Hopefully those 2 policies have grown in value. Let's say they're now worth, I don't know, £5,000 each. So the client receives £10,000. There'll be a £6,000 chargeable gain, and that will be assessed on the settlor for the purposes of income tax in the usual way, with all the usual bells and whistles like top slicing relief, for example. Just the £6,000 gain will be assessable, not the full £10,000 that the client will receive. So that meets the client's requirements. The trustees then defer the other 3 policies for 10 years and put those onto the end of the conveyor belt. End of year 12, settlor would like some benefit again. He's got a very expensive holiday coming up in a couple of years' time. So he mentions this to the trustees, who this year decide to allow 3 policies to mature. Maturity benefits are paid to the client, gains are assessed on the client. They then defer the other 2 policies for 2 years in order to help finance this very expensive holiday that's coming up. you don't have to defer maturities and put them all the way onto the end of the conveyor belt. If the client's requirements are such that a different deferral period is required, well, it's flexible enough to be able to cope with that. End of year 13, settlor would like some benefit again. In addition, he thinks he may need to change his car in about 3 years. So the settlors again decide to allow three policies to mature. Maturity benefits are paid to the client, gains are assessed on the client. They then defer one policy for 3 years in order to help finance this replacement car. And the other policy they defer for 8 years and put that onto the end of the conveyor belt. Flexible enough to have different deferral periods for different policies. End of year 14, we've now come to this very expensive holiday, so the settlor says, I want the lot. So the trustees allow all of those policies to mature, all of the maturity proceeds are paid to the client, and the gains are assessed on the client. End of year 15, settlor would like some benefit again. In addition, he wants the trust to help his son with the costs of university. Now, if this was a gift and loan trust, if this was a discounted gift trust, you wouldn't be able to entertain that. But with the flexible reversionary trust, there's no reason at all why the trustees shouldn't surrender one or more of the policies and give the cash to one or more of the beneficiaries. But if they do that, the chargeable gain triggered by that surrender will still be assessed on the settlor, even though the benefits are going to the son. Now you can easily imagine a situation where the settlor is suffering much higher income tax rates compared to the income tax rates applicable to the son. Not terribly tax efficient. In those circumstances, therefore, before they encash the policy, it would probably be wise for the trustees to appoint the policy to the son. If they make that appointment absolute and irrevocable, when the trustees subsequently surrender the policy, the gain will then be assessed on the son, not on the settlor, not on the trustees. So that meets the settlor's requirements as far as the son is concerned. Trustees again decide to allow three policies to mature. Maturity benefits are paid to the client, gains are assessed on the client, and the final policy they defer for 6 years and put that onto the end of the conveyor belt. So how is this type of arrangement treated for the purposes of periodic and exit charges? Here's a client who, like every other client, has invested an amount within the nil rate band into a flexible reversionary trust, taken maturities a couple of times, all of the benefits have been paid out within the first 10 years. Probably comes as no surprise that because there is no tax payable when the trust is created, there can't be any inheritance tax exit charges within the first 10 years. So what if the trust lasts for longer than 10 years? What if the benefits are paid out after, let's say, 15 years? Well, again, because the amount going in is within the available nil rate band, there's no tax payable at the outset, and that means there can't be any exit charges in the first 10 years. But what happens when we get to the 10th anniversary? Now, you might remember this slide from earlier, when I said, when you get to the 10th anniversary, you can't just take into account the value of the trust fund. You have to add back in any capital payments made to the beneficiaries in the previous 10 years. So doesn't that mean that we have to add back in those maturity payments that were made to the settlor in the first 10 years and add them on top of the value of the trust fund in order to determine whether the total exceeds the nil rate band? Turns out the answer is no, you don't. HMRC's view is that maturity payments to the settlor can be ignored in any subsequent periodic charge calculation. payments to beneficiaries, appointments to beneficiaries, they do have to be added back in. But maturity payments to the set law can be completely ignored. In fact, HMRC answered a question that we didn't even ask them. It's HMRC's view that maturity payments to the set law can never trigger inheritance tax exit charges. In some circumstances, payments to beneficiaries, appointments to beneficiaries could trigger inheritance tax exit charges. But maturity payments to the set law are non-events as far as periodic and exit charges are concerned. So that means that at the 10th anniversary in this example, there wouldn't have been a periodic charge, and that means there cannot be any inheritance tax exit charges for the following 10 years. So this is why we believe that the flexible reversionary trust gives you the flexibility of access to capital that you get with the gift and loan trust, but unlike the gift and loan trust, you get not only the growth out of the estate immediately, the capital is also out of the estate after 7 years. And benefits can be paid to the beneficiaries whenever the trustees think it's appropriate. It's not a universal panacea for every client with an inheritance tax problem. You will have clients for whom the gift and loan trust is the right solution. You will have clients for whom the discounted gift trust is the right solution, but they're not the only two solutions available. You will have clients for whom the flexible reversionary trust is the right solution, and they're not mutually exclusive. There's no reason at all why the client shouldn't put some capital into a gift and loan, some into a discounted gift, and some into a flexible reversionary trust. I hope some of that has been of use to you this morning. Thank you for listening. Allow me to hand you back to Mark.
Thanks, Paul. I think we'll have to leave it there because I am conscious that we don't want to overrun. Before we go, I thought it was worth summarising some of the extensive support that is available to you from Canada Life. As you can see on the screen there, you have technical numbers. If you ever need any support, you're very welcome to phone through to those. In addition to that, obviously, we have a wide range of support material in the form of brochures, newsletters, regular briefing notes that are produced by Paul and the team. And included in that is obviously our webinar series that you're listening to today and our TechCast as well, which are available via our YouTube site. In addition to that, you do have the support of both field-based and centrally located account managers. As the number says as well, the ICANN Technical Services team are also available to you either via email or via telephone as required. So that's the end of this morning's webinar. Before I go, though, I will just remind you that obviously we had the budget this week. Hopefully you should have seen an email that's come out this morning, which does include a budget summary, again, put together by our technical support team. And as well as that, we've got some updated tax tables for you as well. There are limited supplies of hard copies of the tax tables, so please do contact your account manager if you're looking for those. So as I say, that's the end of this morning's webinar. Hopefully you all found that useful. We really do value your feedback on these webinars, though, so we would ask you to complete the short survey that comes up as you exit the webinar, as this helps us to make sure that we keep these relevant for you in the future. We're going to switch the audio off now, but we will leave the chat box facility open. So if you do want to raise questions, please do continue to do so, and we'll come back to you outside of the webinar on those. But finally, thank you again for your time this morning, and we hope you join us again next time.